Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On this broadcast previously, we heard from Lieutenant Governor Brian Krolicki on the dismissed indictments against him. Today, the response from Attorney General Catherine Cortez Masto. Plus, on the Power Pundit panel today, Marita Black Prothrow. It's all coming up next on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Nevada Newsmakers, brought to you in part by the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center, the world's largest industrial park. The Resort at Red Hawk and the Las Vegas Review-Journal and reviewjournal.com.
High-tech companies demand perfect world amenities. They require clean, reliable power, state-of-the-art fiber optic communications, and clean water sources. In a perfect world, companies would have immediate access to rail and interstate freeways. There would be four-lane expressways that shorten shipping times and provide convenient commute routes for valued employees. Well, the future is now, and it's here. Welcome to the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center, the largest industrial park in the world, building economic prosperity for Nevadans.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shad, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we are very pleased to welcome back to the program Catherine Cortez Masto, the Attorney General for the great state of Nevada. Pleasure to have you on the program.
It's great to be here, Sam. Thank you.
We wanted to have you respond to the interview we did with Lieutenant Governor Brian Krolicki, but I want to refer first to an editorial on December 8th that was headlined, "A Clumsy, Amateurish Effort." This is from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. And in there they wrote, "Whether the indictment against Lieutenant Governor Brian Krolicki was indeed a partisan witch hunt is a matter of debate, but there can be little doubt that the legal action was strange and ill-conceived. A district court judge tossed out all the charges against Mr. Krolicki and an aide who were accused of mismanaging the state's college savings program. But that aside, it's fair to ask, what was the Attorney General, Catherine Cortez Masto, doing? Her indictment never specified how Mr. Krolicki benefited from the purported management mismanagement. In addition, there were no allegations that any funds were missing or that any participant had been shortchanged. The gist of the charges seemed to center on criticism that Mr. Krolicki had overspent his advertising budget and did so as an act of self-promotion during the 2006 campaign. In dismissing all four felony counts, Clark County District Judge Valerie Adair blasted the indictment as deficient and flawed. She noted that it failed to meet even minimal legal requirements and didn't properly lay out the charges and did not satisfy due process. Surely Ms. Cortez Masto needs to do better than that." How do you respond?
Sure. Let me start off by saying, first of all, as a prosecutor, we have a professional responsibility as attorneys and prosecutors under the rules of in this state, Nevada, and the ABA rules. And one of the things we can't do as a prosecutor when there is ongoing litigation is really come out and talk to the press in a manner that would unduly heighten public condemnation of the accused. So as a prosecutor, most prosecutors, you don't see them coming out, talking about the press, talking about the case in the press, and you save that for the trial, and that's what I did in this case. Now, a lot of people have asked me why it was brought, and I'm happy to talk about that and can talk about that, and specifically now that it's no longer moving forward. At the time it came before me, I had before me a bipartisan audit, legislative audit, which I had never been presented with before in the office and still haven't. They had sent it over to me to be part of the criminal investigation. There was an 18-month independent criminal investigation done by the Department of Public Safety. It's not my division. And so I had before me not only the audit, I had the investigation, which made clear, based on the evidence and facts that they uncovered, that in this case, the former treasurer, Mr. Krolicki, had utilized money, approximately about $6 million, and it did not put it back into the state coffers. It was money that should have gone back into the state coffers, but he directed it, redirected it, and decided how he was going to spend the money. Now, with that said, that is against the laws of this state. We have a state budget act. The legislature, it's very clear under our constitution and our statutes that the legislature directs how the money is going to be appropriated.
Well, he completely disagrees with you. He says that this is not general fund money.
It is. It is general fund money.
Well, he disagrees with you. Well,
sure. Let me explain.
Can I go back? Because, I mean, I think it's pretty serious when the attorney general of a state goes against the sitting lieutenant governor. So my big question, and he asked questions in here. you know, what are the felonies that you were going after him for? Because it was clear from the judge's comments that the indictment didn't make sense. It didn't add up. That's why she threw it out. So what were the felonies?
Sure. Let me explain, though. What went before the judge wasn't the merits of the case. She didn't talk about the fact that it lacked merit or the fact that there was a lack of the charges. What she talked about was the indictment itself and that there was inadequate notice on the indictment.
And how did you let that pass?
Typically what happens is when there is a claim of inadequate notice on an indictment, you get to amend it at that time. The judge did not allow us to do that. So then the next step for us, was to then bring it before the grand jury again. But by that time, the statute of limitations had already run, so we couldn't bring it back before the grand jury. So that left us the only avenue, which was to appeal it. And to appeal something like this is a very heavy burden to overcome because you have to show that the judge abused their discretion. And so that was a consideration I made in whether we were going to move forward or not. But with that said, going back to the felony, at the time it came before me,
alleged felony.
At the time it came before me, we had very specific statute, particularly to a state treasurer, that they were required when money came to them that was state fund, it had to be put into the State Budget Act. In this particular account, there was a specific account it was supposed to go into. It did not occur in this case. It is a felony. The legislature has indicated it is a felony. It's not a misdemeanor. It's not a civil penalty or a fine. It is a felony. I don't dictate that. The legislature dictates that. So that's where that felony came from. So with that said, when all of this was before me, I had an indication that a crime had been committed under the statutes of our state, particularly to a state treasurer. And if you think about it, a state treasurer and its specific statute for a treasurer, because a treasurer has a fiduciary duty to the people of the state to handle the money in an appropriate manner.
What money was missing? There was no money missing. It was balanced to the penny.
The statute doesn't require money to be missing. The statute says that an individual, a public official, or a treasurer is required when money comes into their possession that belongs to the state, they're supposed to deposit in the state. And there's a reason for that, because they're the treasurer handling the state money, and they're the treasurer handling the government money or the taxpayers' money. There's a reason, because without that money going into, in this particular case, the state coffers, the legislature had no idea $6 million was out there. The legislature had no authority or no ability to redirect that money where it should have gone.
Well, Lieutenant Governor
says that was the concern
here. This was being run as a national program. It had all kinds of safeguards in place. It wasn't part of the general fund.
The money that was set up, yes, it was investment money that was state-earned fees. It was a term of art. It was called state-earned fees. And so the investment funds that were set up, according to at least the investigation and the legislative audit, if you read the legislative audit, shows that the money from the investment funds that were part of this college savings fund, they earned state-earned fees. And that state-earned fees was required, they were required, these fees, to go into the state coffers, into back to the state for the legislature to handle. And so what I had before me was an indication that a treasurer, based on the facts and information, had not put the money back to where it was belonged, to the state. And so I at least had to make the decision whether I was going to ignore that, or as the Attorney General of this state, who represents the individuals and interests of the state and the taxpayers, and hopefully has their public trust with them, I had to make a decision. And the decision I made was, well, let's take it to a grand jury and have the grand jury make a determination whether there's probable cause to move forward with a trial, and they did. And that's as simple as this case. And that was my determination at the time. That's why we did it. I realize a lot of people say that he didn't utilize the money for his own benefit, but that's not what the statute requires. The statute requires an individual, particularly a treasurer, and in this case we had a treasurer who was not a new treasurer. He had been in office for at least two terms, and prior to that had worked for the treasurer. So it was somebody who knew the laws of this state. And so my concern was, when I had all of that information before me, the facts and evidence to indicate that the treasurer intentionally had taken money and redirected it, and the legislature had no idea it was there or couldn't utilize it in the manner that they felt that they had the authority to do.
Well, that was my concern. We have to take a commercial break, but mm-hmm. I do want to reiterate the lieutenant governor completely disagrees with you and says that this is not general fund money and it could not be spent, in his words, to feed a child. It just wasn't the case.
For the jury to decide. That was absolutely for the jury to decide.
And yet the jury's not going to. We'll have more on this when we come back on Nevada Newsmakers right after this timeout.
So, who do you use for workers' comp?
Pro Group Management.
Oh, I've heard some good things about them.
You bet. Employee background check, safety training, claim seminars. Oh, here's the great part. If you have an issue, they work for you, not against you.
Well, sounds perfect. And expensive.
Well, that's the best part. They saved me 25%, and I've heard they saved more for others.
Works for me.
Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're talking with the Attorney General of the great state of Nevada, Catherine Cortez Masto, discussing the case against Brian Krolicki that was dismissed. How much money did the Attorney General's office spend on prosecuting this case?
On the prosecution with the three attorneys, I don't have a specific number. I know we gave it previously. I want to say it was a couple of $100,000.
And Lieutenant Governor Krolicki also spent hundreds of thousands of dollars not only defending himself, he also plans to raise money to defend his associate, Kathy Besser. With this amount of money, why did you not proceed? Why did you not appeal the judge's decision when there was already this much money invested?
Because I had already said, the only avenue left for us was to appeal it. If we still had the ability to go back before a grand jury, we would have considered that. We actually asked the judge in our motion to allow us to amend the indictment, which normally occurs, and she refused to do so. So that only left right now the ability to appeal. And as I stated before, that is a very heavy burden to overcome. You have to show the judge abuse their discretion. And at the time, I had to consider the other things that we were doing in the office, the other needs, knowing that budget cuts were coming up, and we know now what those are going to be.
But you also
and we had other issues we had to deal with.
A major political case here, because you're affecting the career and potential re-election of Brian Krolicki. So, I mean, this wasn't something that was just something that was, a maybe here. I mean, if you really believed in the case, shouldn't you have continued on with it?
I do, and I still believe in the case, and I was disappointed with it. But at the same time, I had to look at where we were and whether we were going to be as successful on an appeal. Let me just finish this. At the same time, if I wanted to play politics with this case, I would have appealed it because that would have dragged it out. It would have held it over Mr. Krolicki's head. That's not what I was looking to do here. What I was looking to do was what was right by the people of the state. But at the same time, I have to consider what's going on in my office. We have a mortgage fraud issue that we're dealing with. It takes 90% of my time.
But you're asking me why I made the decision I did. But we have limited time.
Let me get it out there real quickly.
Let me throw out one thing that he said on the program. He said, we heeded their advice from the beginning, the AG's office. The Board of Examiners approved the actions. That would be the contract. How does a lawyer prosecute their client for following their own advice?
Sure, and let me get back to that then. You know, and again, these are all allegations that would have been brought before the jury, and he's every right to make his defense. But at the same time, I had before me the legislative audit as well as an independent investigation which indicated a crime had occurred. At the same time, when you're talking about a potential conflict in my office and that we advised him, my attorneys did not advise him that he could take the money outside of the state coffers and utilize it in the manner he did. What he's trying to claim is they did just that. My attorneys did not tell him that he could do that. What they did, if anything, was to look at the contracts that were the basis for the College Savings Fund and sign off them as to form. But those contracts were not the basis for the criminal allegations against him. Those had nothing to do with the criminal allegations against him at the time.
Your husband was going to host a fundraiser for a family friend, Ryan Rondazzo, who's planning to run against the lieutenant governor. It was canceled when the word got out. That pretty much stunned everybody in the political world in Nevada. In the middle of all this, that was happening with your husband.
Yeah, I mean, I tell you, to me, I know it sounds unbelievable, but I had no idea that was occurring at the time. My husband and I did not talk that he was going to be hosting the fundraiser. Was not very happy with him at that point in time. But at the same time, you know, he has every right to support who he wants to do. I know people were trying to make some connection that somehow that had something to do with why this prosecution was moving forward, but it wasn't. This prosecution, the train was running down the track 2 years before my husband was even involved in supporting Mr. Randazzo. And at the same time, my husband and Mr. Randazzo's wife were Secret Service agents together. They were friends. He was supporting him. Has nothing to do with the prosecution against Mr. Krolicki. It was very unfortunate, absolutely, and that's why as soon as I found out about it, not only did I talk to my husband about not getting involved and being a part of it, I contacted defense counsel on the other side to make them aware of what was going on, and that was the only time that I was really willing to step up and say, yes, here's what's happening. If you'd want us out, my office out, and we would declare a conflict and move out. But they wanted to keep us on, and so we stayed on. Every other time, I've fought to stay in this case because there has not been a conflict. In this case, the fundraiser wasn't a conflict per se. It was a perceived conflict. And it was not illegal in that sense.
Exactly.
And that's why I stepped up. That's why I stepped up to the plate and said, absolutely, we'd be willing to step out. But defense counsel wanted us to stay in, and so that was their choice. But at least from my perspective, I felt that I did everything once I became aware of it to do the right thing.
Kathy Bessa, why did you go after her? Wasn't she low-hanging fruit? Was it just to see if she would give up something on the lieutenant governor?
No, it was aiding and abetting. If you actually look at the facts of the case and read the legislative audit, you will see that she was really a part of what was happening here, at least based on the facts that I had in front of me.
But she was following things that had already been in place.
No, she wasn't. What she was doing, at least on the facts that we had in front of us, was she was actively and intimately involved in what they called this offline budgeting. And that's where they took the $6 million and kept it outside of the legislative's purview. For instance, there was a check that came from one of the investment funds that was supposed to, it was made out to the state of Nevada because it was supposed to go into the state's budget account. When that check came in, it was over for $100,000 or more. Mr. Krolicki and Ms. Besser decided that they didn't want the check to go into that account, so they sent a letter back and asked them to reissue the check for a specific escrow account so that it would be deposited into an escrow account that the legislature had no idea was there, that nobody did, and so that they could utilize it in the manner they felt was appropriate.
Well,
that was the concern that I, information that I had before me when we brought it to the grand jury.
Well, and again, I refer back to Lieutenant Governor's point that he feels that it was not anything to do with the general fund and it was not the legislature's purview, but the rules and regulations were based on the national rules for these kind of programs.
You know, and that's his argument, but there was also a legislative audit, a bipartisan legislative audit, that said just the opposite. There was an 18-month investigation by the Division of Public Safety that said just the opposite. Those were the facts that were before me at the time that I decided we needed to bring it before a grand jury.
And that's where we have to leave it. I thank you so much for coming on to talk about this. We'll come back another day and talk about other topics.
Thank you
so much for being here. We'll be right back on Nevada Newsmakers after this timeout.
South Reno's hotspot for food, fun, and friends is the Tamarack Junction. Enjoy great food 24 hours a day in the dining car restaurant. For a quick bite and the best sandwiches in town, it's the Whistle Stop Deli. And for the best appetizers and menu selections and a large variety of cocktails, beer, and martinis, it's Sully Sports Bar and Grill. The Tamarack Junction is your junction for fun, just north of the Summit Sierra on South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
It's easy to kick back and relax when you have the perfect place to, well, kick back and relax. And RC Willie has quite the selection.
This month, you'll find incredible savings on everything for your great room. Save now on brand name HDTVs and home theater systems. You'll also save on recliners and sofas and sectionals with built-in recliners. Receive a free gift when you visit rcwillie.com and enter to win a $7,000 dream great room.
So put your feet up at RC Willie, where it's your home, your way.
I was looking for something reliable and safe for my family when I discovered Toyota Certified Used Vehicles. They're thoroughly inspected, have amazing warranties, roadside assistance, and a Carfax Vehicle History Report. Plus, Toyota is a name I trust.
Get something you can trust, like Toyota Certified Used Vehicles. The best new cars make the best used cars. Get 2.9% financing for up to 60 months on a Toyota Certified Used Corolla, Prius, or Tundra. Where? Your local Toyota dealer.
There's no better way for me to start my day than with a good run. There's really no other exercise that gives you the same feeling. I ran the the Lincoln Marathon. It was a great experience, and the adrenaline from the crowd was amazing. If you can get yourself to go for the run, it's going to feel good, and you're going to feel good mentally. When I help somebody, I like to ask them what they're training for and what's motivating them. I'm Missy Khan, and I'm a running expert at Shields.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
I'm back on Nevada Newsmakers. Welcome back to the program, Verita Black Prothrow. She's the business development manager for Nevada Arrhythmia Services and a former staffer for Senator John Ensign and Congressman Dean Heller. In response to the furor around Senator Reid's published remarks that were made privately in the new book, Game Change, you fired off an email to me that was one of the most eloquent things I've ever read with your thoughts and your frustrations. Share with the audience, if you will, some of the things that you raised.
Well, I was really just outraged that people were calling for Senator Reid to resign. There were a lot of reasons why I found that outrageous, but the biggest reason was that it was being compared to Trent Lott's comments in 2002, where he was, in essence, glorifying segregation. And, you know, both my parents lived through segregation, and to compare what Senator Reid said, which was meant as a compliment, to what Trent Lott said in glorifying one of the ugliest periods in our country's history, is just outrageous. And there were a couple things. I'd been to church earlier, and they had some conversations after the service, and people were saying that when did the RNC become so sensitive to African Americans, and why didn't this happen during the campaign when, you know, we saw all these horrible photos of and footage of people with monkey dolls, and they were calling it Obama, and he was the Democrat nominee for president of the United States, and there was an outrage then. We saw all these horrible email messages that came out. Now, they didn't come out from the RNC, but I didn't see that sense of outrage when we, you know, there was the email message about how the Easter egg hunt was going to be a watermelon hunt, or Obama as a witch doctor with a bone through his nose when the health care debate started. Where was the outrage then? And it just seemed so inauthentic. And we have to stop that. We have to have some authentic conversations about race, and it can't be this gotcha stuff. This just doesn't work.
What do you think about Michael Steele, you know, as the head of the RNC, and his comments that he's made, you know, over the last several days?
I'm so disappointed in Michael Steele, because again, he is comparing what Trent Lott said to what Senator Reid said, and there's no comparison. Michael Steele has to have relatives, perhaps even his own parents, who lived in under segregation. I mean, it was American apartheid, where people were intimidated. It wasn't just that people had to go in a different door. There was intimidation. There were tens of thousands of primarily black men who were lynched, but there were also women and children who were lynched during that time. There was the education system that was subpar, didn't even begin to explain it, to describe it. And for him to know, to have this body of knowledge, more than likely within his own family as well, to compare these two things, it was not what he should be doing. You know, he's in a high-profile position. He's an African-American in a high-profile position, and he really has the opportunity to make some meaningful changes and to just kind of go along to get along, and maybe that's harsh, but it's the way that I feel about it, is not the way to do that. And he really should take advantage of this awesome opportunity that he has to do some great work in this country.
So what should he have said?
I think that he should have said that Senator Reid should not have said what he said, which he shouldn't have. He shouldn't have used those terms. I think that he said what a lot of people were thinking, and I think that he should say that, you know, that Senator Reid should apologize for it, which he did apologize for it. But I think that he also should have said that, you know, this is yet another opportunity for us to talk about race in this country and really give Republicans an opportunity to talk about race, because they don't do too well when it comes to minority communities.
Why do you think that we have such a difficult time in this country talking about race?
You know, Sam, it is such an emotional, it's a visceral issue. If conversations come up, people feel like they're being called a racist, and so they automatically recoil. They don't want to even have the conversation. And you know, it's like, well, you know, that's in the past. We shouldn't keep talking about that. You know, that was a long time ago, and it's not that way anymore. But I think this is another opportunity for us to see that just there's so much ignorance about our country's past. And I think if we had more understanding and more sensitivity in all communities of each other, we would understand that we can have these conversations. We really can. But I think people just get defensive on both sides.
Do you think, and I've heard this said quite a bit, that people under 30, race is no longer an issue for them?
I'm not sure if that's true. I think it is less of an issue, much less of an issue, than it is for people over 30. And hopefully then the next generation, I think that might be a very true statement. But certainly for people who are under 30, they just, you know, it doesn't have the same emotional attachment. And I think that's because of years of integration, that, you know, that Mr. Laud apparently and Strom Thurmond did not want. But it's working, and that's the good news. It is working.
And that's where we have to leave it. I thank you so much for coming in, and maybe we need to take responsibility on this program to continue this conversation about race.
Anytime.
Thank you so much. We'll be right back on Nevada Newsmakers after this timeout.
If you have back pain, arthritis, fibromyalgia, tendonitis, any kind of joint and muscle pain or stiffness at all, you finally have a safe, effective relief. Dr. Frank's homeopathic joint and muscle pain relief.
I had a lot of fear that I would be crippled at a very young age. It was a miracle that I found something safe and that had such dramatic pain relief.
Dr. Frank's is all natural. Just spray here and stop all your pain everywhere. For the first time ever, these 10 homeopathic ingredients have been combined in a revolutionary oral spray that stops inflammation, pain, and stiffness.
I pretty much quit tennis just because of the pounding. Since using this spray, my pain and tenderness and swelling and soreness and stiffness has gone.
If you have any kind of joint and muscle pain or stiffness, Dr. Frank's Joint and Muscle Pain Relief is the safe, all-natural relief you've been searching for.
I have no pain in my knees, no sciatica, and I'm pain-free.
I'm Dr. Ken Frank. I'm a medical doctor. There is a safe way to stop your pain, and I guarantee that your daily aches and pains, whether mild or severe, will stop or significantly decrease with this formula.
Start living your life pain-free. Try safe, effective Dr. Frank's risk-free. Call now and get a 200-spray trial bottle for only $19.95.
It was as though someone has given me an electric shock that went up the arm, and I could not do that. Now, I can't get that pain no matter how far I turn my arm. And now I'm playing tennis again.
Call now and spray away your pain in days. Call now for your risk-free trial bottle of Dr. Frank's Joint and Muscle Pain Relief. Ask how to double the supply for free. And also ask how to get for free Dr. Frank's 100-page book about natural and safe pain relief without drugs.
Call now. 1-800-572-9269. 1-800-572-9269. That's 1-800-572-9269.
Dr. Frank's Pain Relief really works.
And on the next broadcast, we'll have State Senator Mark Amadei here. He's running for United States Senate against Senator Reid if he can break out of the primary. Thanks for watching and listening to Nevada Newsmakers. As always, you can watch Nevada Newsmakers 24 hours a day at NevadaNewsmakers.com. See you next time.